So what I want to talk about today is actually related to this. How should people of faith show up at work or at school or wherever we spend our days? For some of us, work is just the interruption to our real lives. You know, we are living for Friday at 5 p.m. I know things are a little more flexible these days in different ways, but you get the point. We're living for that. That's when real life starts, and we're all good for the weekend. And then Sunday around dinner time, we start to get what some people call the Sunday scaries. We're dreading what we're about to show up for the next day. And I understand that some people have different kinds of jobs where that is a little more understandable than others. But we spend a lot of time at work. It's hard to just write it off as something unimportant or this different personality, different life that we have. I read some statistics and came up with some numbers. I think if you think about yourself in school, K through 12, you spend about 15,000 hours from K through 12 in school. That is 2 years of 24-hour days back to back. When you work a career, that's about 100,000 hours at work. That's 11 years of 24-hour days. That's a lot of time. Think of the opportunities for spiritual growth and development you have in all that time. We just can't ignore those important hours of our lives. So yes, some people dread all that. Other people, they live for that. That's all their life is about. Maybe not so much school, I'm going to be honest about that, but work. Like for some people, that is where they only come alive. And they live for those moments, and they hustle so hard. We've already talked about Sabbath a few weeks ago, about the importance of intentionally stopping work to focus on our spiritual growth. Today, I just want to talk about what do we do with our faith at school and at work? What does it look like for Christians to show up in these places as ambassadors for Jesus? The discipline we're talking about today is called missional presence. That's what Rich Velotis calls it in his book. It's a very practical topic because we spend a lot of time in these places and we need to think about how we show up and how we represent Jesus in the different ways we might be called to do so. I want to draw your attention to Colossians chapter 3, where Paul makes a couple of statements about our work back to back. In Colossians chapter 3, he's writing to a church. In this instance, it's not because there's anything wrong or he needs to correct things. He's just talking to them about life and what it looks like to live for Jesus in the different spaces of our lives. So in Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 15, Paul says this: "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace, and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Here Paul is talking about the worshipful part of life, not just like the 1 or 2 hours on Sunday, not worship service only, but about how we worship with our lives, how we sing and teach each other. But in this passage, he says, whatever you do, do it in Jesus' name. So there's worship. Later on, he's talking about different roles we might fill in society and in our households. And he says something similar. He says, starting in verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. So he talked about worship. Now he's talking about work and labor in the context of these roles that we might fill in society. And the ending is very similar. Whatever you do, do it for the Lord. And you do it with all your heart, because in the end, it's the Lord you're serving, not humans. So I think Paul is calling us to do our work, whatever that looks like, with excellence. We should be the best students and the best employees. And that doesn't mean always the best grades ever and knocking it out of the park with awards at work. That's not what he's talking about here. But in the end, I think he's saying whether it's worship or work, you do everything to the glory of God, no matter what your surroundings immediately might look like. See, we like to split worship and work. We can divide our spiritual lives and our work lives. This is the church me, and then here's the work me. And they use different words sometimes, and they speak with different tones. And I don't want the people in either place to know about each other. Like, I don't really want my worship people to know how I show up as my work self. And, you know, at work, I really don't want them to know that I even have a worship side, because that might seem a little weird. We can split those things. And when we do that, we are probably following Plato more than we are Jesus, because we're not a divided self. We're not a work self and a worship self, a physical being and then a spiritual being. That's not how Scripture talks about us. We are whole persons, and all of those go together and work together. So we're called to bring our best selves, our Jesus-shaped selves, our work with all your heart selves to our jobs and schools. And when we don't bring our best selves, our Jesus-shaped selves, to jobs and schools or other daily activities, we're not reflecting well on the Lord. I want to play you a brief clip from a cult classic movie, Office Space. Oh, you know where this is headed. In this clip, there's just a kind of a standard tech company who has brought in two consultants to help them see some inefficiencies and how they can better manage their employees. So in this clip, there's this slacker employee named Peter Gibbons showing up for questioning by the consultants. Why don't you watch this clip?
Looks better. Looks like a Peter Gibbons.
Ah, there you are.
We're just talking about you. You must be Peter Gibbons.
Terrific.
I'm Bob Slidell. This is my associate, Bob Porter.
Hi, Bob.
Go ahead and grab a seat and join us for a minute.
You see, what we're actually trying to do here is we're trying to get a feel for how people spend their day at work. So, if you would, would you walk us through a typical day for you?
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. That way Lumber can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
Yeah. I just stare at my desk. But it looks like I'm working. I do that for probably another hour after lunch, too. I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Now, if you worked at this company, Inatech, I think it is, and you knew Peter Gibbons claimed to be a faithful Christian, what might you think about him? You probably wouldn't think, I'm sure he's a dedicated Christian and his workplace behavior is just a fluke. But think of the flip side. What if Peter were one of those who were knocking it out of the park, an excellent employee? How might his coworkers see his faith and work together? Think of the opportunity he might have. Martin Luther King Jr. once said this: if a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will pause to say, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well. Some of us are in places in our schools, in our work, where we get a lot of accolades, a lot of rewards, plenty of recognition. Others of us are less seen. We work hard, but the recognition isn't there. And it's not okay to have your work ignored by the people who should pay attention to it. It's not okay to feel the discouragement of working hard and feeling like no one cares. But I want you to know that even if that's you, that your good work is not for nothing. Others around you might not see it, Teachers, principals, bosses might not see it, but the Lord sees your good work. And it might not feel as real as another human around you seeing that, but I want you to know that it's not nothing, that your God sees the work that you do and cares and is grateful that you're using the gifts that he's given you to do excellent work. Many of us could point to people in our schools, in our workplaces, who are shining examples for Jesus, not maybe because they're all the time doing Bible studies and evangelizing everyone. That's fine when it makes sense in those contexts, but we recognize their faith because of how they show up to work and work well. I've encountered people like this in my life. There was a man named Kelly Barker. Kelly was a self-employed carpenter in Oklahoma City. He was a member at the church where I served previously. I showed up to my office on the first day of work there in 2008, and the person in the office before me was, let's say, a minimalist and had ripped out all the bookshelves. So there were just a few, it looked like, I don't know, chicken coop boxes on the wall. And I knew for the sake of organization and my marriage, I needed to get the books out of my house and have a place to put them. And there were not enough shelves in the office I was going to occupy. So I had heard that there was a member named Kelly who built shelves for the church and many other people. So I called him in and said, Kelly, could we do something here? Could we add some things? And so after great conversations and getting to know a good man, he built these shelves for me in my previous office, and I put some lights on them. He did his work with diligence. And he did incredible work, and he viewed it as a way to serve God because he was building bookshelves, some for ministers to store books on, some for church members. He built other things, did whole remodels of people's kitchens and bathrooms, and he viewed it as a way to serve God through the excellent gifts he'd been given. We had many conversations where he talked about how he viewed his craft as a way to serve God. And I was reminded by this quote from Dorothy Sayers, who says that the church's approach to an intelligent carpenter is usually confined to exhorting him not to be drunk and disorderly in his leisure hours and to come to church on Sundays. What the church should be telling him is this, that the very first demand that his religion makes upon him is that he should make good tables. Church, by all means, and decent forms of amusement, certainly, but what use is all that if in the very center of his life and occupation, he is insulting God with bad carpentry? Kelly worked with all his heart, and he reflected his Lord well. My dad became an auto technician in the early 1970s, and within 10 years had worked his way up to the service manager at Joe Pistocco Auto Mall in Wichita Falls. That was the position he held when I was born. And I remember as a kid seeing all the newspaper articles about the awards that their service department would win. I mean, top in the nation, you know, one of the top Pontiac dealerships in customer satisfaction, one of the top GM service centers. They really focused on treating their customers well. And I watched my dad do this as a kid, and I saw how diligent he was about making sure that people felt good about the work that was done to their car. Nobody really is thrilled when they have to go get their car worked on and see the bill. And my dad made sure they were treated with dignity and respect and honesty. Then in high school, I got to go work there. So in the afternoons after school and then all day in the summer, I finally got to see this man in action. And I saw how he treated customers. I saw how he treated his employees, who by that time were sort of like sons to him, and watched him mentor them. And they would come to me and say things like, you know, your dad is just a really good man. And I would watch these customers say, I feel really treated really well when your dad is overseeing the work done on my car. And I thought to myself, I want to be like that. I don't know what I'm going to do, but whatever I do, I want people to say, he's a good man, and he treats me with integrity. So my dad showed up in his own kind of quiet, behind-the-scenes way, and practiced his faith by serving people with excellence and integrity. And I got the privilege to watch it. It made a big impact on me. You know people like this too. And what we all know is that good work reflects a good God. Christians who do good work reflect well on their Lord. Can I give you just a few reminders of how we can do this? I think a lot of you already do this. But just some reminders on how to bridge the gap between our faith and our work in our school, between worship and work. The first thing is what we said, just work with excellence. Even if your boss or teachers or others don't know your good work, even if they don't care, I'm just reminding you that God does. And God gave you gifts and talents, and he delights in seeing you use them. Do your work well. I don't mean give in to hustle culture. I don't mean work 80 hours a week all the time and neglect family and friends. I just mean that show up and do your work and take pride in it. And that will reflect well on the God you serve. Another thing you can do is to, I would just say it this way, be that person that others go to. There are going to be people in your schools and in your workplaces and in your life who might ask the question, why does this person, this Christian, care about this part of my life? Why do they react differently to stress than others do? What is it that gives that person a different sort of deep strength? You have been in schools and workplaces where that person exists. It may be that you are that person. There are people whose demeanor and whose availability mean that others will come to them and share parts of their lives. You've got a lot of people at your school and work who don't have church families, who don't have relationships like you do. You may be all they have to share something important that's happening to them, to pray with them when that makes sense. You can be that person that others know is different and that they go to when something comes up. And then related to that, what if you could reframe distractions as missions? There are probably a lot of things on your plate at school, at jobs. You got plenty to do. You don't really have time for other people's interruptions. But if you can become an interruptible person that doesn't make other people feel like an annoyance, who has their own self together enough that they can pivot when someone else needs you, you will be an incredible blessing to people around you. If you can be lovingly present, you can remake the world. Everyone is distracted, everyone is busy, and when you become a person who is able to handle some interruptions to serve others, and then you view them not as an interruption, but exactly what God might be wanting you to do in that moment. You do that, you will make a huge difference among the people who are around you. There are lots of people, I don't care where you are, lots of people with lots of issues. They crave some comfort, they crave some stability. You might be able to provide that for them. So to do these things, like, you don't have to be some award winner. You don't have to be some headline grabber. You don't have to be top in your field. You need to show up with the presence of Christ, being constantly formed more and more like him through the practices we've been talking about. That's the goal. Show up and be like Jesus. You don't have to be famous. You don't have to be all in the newspapers. You don't have to get awards. You just have to show up and act like Jesus. So the thing is, like, about our church, we do have people who might be well known. And the thing I like about those folks is when people might find out that they attend here, the takeaway isn't, well, look at that prestige. You know what the takeaway usually is? Wow, that's a really good person. You must have a really good church. Some of the people I know here who might be more well-known in Greater Dallas or beyond are not just seen as important figures, but they're seen as godly people That matters. And then for all of us, whether you show up in headlines or not, you make a difference. You don't need to be well known. That's not most of us. We are quietly going about our work, quietly going about our studies, and making a huge difference because we show up and act like Jesus. So your homework for this discipline of practicing missional presence. So number one, do your work with excellence. Number two, what if you took a moment this week to check up on someone? You took the initiative and did that. Number three, what if you can make yourself available for people who might need the hands and feet of Jesus for a situation in their life? Students, what if you were the person everyone knew would listen to them without judgment, who wouldn't go gossip about them if they told you something that was happening? If you were not as interested in being cool, which is so hard, but if you could think about being respected, that's such a hard pivot to make. Employees, what if you were the person at work that everyone knew they could trust, that everyone knew would turn out a good product because you crafted it with care? What if you were the person who modeled doing excellent work without giving in to hustle culture because you had a life shaped by many disciplines, including Sabbath? That would be an example to so many people. So you may spend 15,000 hours at school from kindergarten through 12th grade. You may spend 100,000 hours at work in your career. That's 15,000 opportunities to make a difference. That's 100,000 opportunities to make a difference in someone's life because you've been shaped by Jesus and you see yourself as a missional presence in your school and in your workplace. So I just urge you to make those hours count, because God has given you many gifts. And I want you to know that your excellent work, your presence, will not be in vain. Let's stand and sing.